Everybody, this is Nobody No Problem. I'm Katie.
And I'm Kristen.
And we are here to tell a story about murders and such.
And surviving the coronavirus together.
Together forever. Yep. Maybe we'll get quarantined together.
We might. Who knows? It'd be great. We just talked about how if we would have Dan drop us off a ton of alcohol.
So much alcohol. Gotta get through somehow. Mm. Gotta get those calories in. Might as well be beer.
For real. Even though, in reality, we might be in the hospital, but it's fine.
I don't think so. We're pretty young and kind of in shape.
Sort of in shape.
We don't have immune problems. So.
I do not. Oh, I have an autoimmune deficiency because I have psoriasis, but not an immune
system. So Kristen might not make it out of here, but I will.
Might not. Although my immune system's okay, but...
Well, what can you do?
Just survive, you know. Live in the dream.
Do your best. If you don't make it, I'll give a speech at your funeral.
Thanks. I hope it's really good.
It probably won't be.
Nah, it's going to be great. It'll probably be hilarious. Just don't make people go to that. Just go to a bar and
we'll have some drinks. We'll go to a bar.
For real.
I've always said that. If I were to die, just go to the fucking bar. Don't even worry about all that.
I don't need any of that awkward nonsense.
No.
It's horrible. I hate those things. I hate when I say I hate those things, too, because... nobody enjoys them. Obviously, they're very sad. But it's just, I get...
But I hate them more.
Yeah. I get, like, clammy and sweaty and shaky, and it's weird.
It's just uncomfortable.
Super uncomfortable.
But for real, plant me as a tree.
Oh, yeah, that was so cool. I was reading about that. I would love to do that. Save the planet, and everybody can remember me as a tree.
Trees are cool.
Trees are dope.
It would definitely serve more purpose than my life.
No, it would not.
I am kidding.
Good, be kidding. Because I would not be...
Some people don't know my really sarcastic, joking nature. That was not self-degrading.
I'm pretty sure...
I just make weird jokes.
They might get it by now. We're on episode 16, bros. We are at almost 1,300 listens. So, we appreciate you. I wanted to say, we have listeners in Italy. And I just want to say, like, huge shout-out. I hope you guys are okay. Like,
good
keep your head up.
Luck.
Good luck with everything.
We might be right there with you
soon. Yeah. It's real scary over there. So if you are listening, I hope that you enjoyed the story you listened to and that you guys are hanging in there. Because
God bless.
God bless is right. Sending all the love and hugs.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, not hugs. Maybe virtual hugs.
Right. Virtual hugs. Because yikes. But, you know, just wanted to say... hope y'all are doing okay.
Yes. To start this party off, I do not know a story that you are sharing. And I am very high in anticipation right now.
So I had some struggles with it a little bit. I don't know why. So I listened to the Audible book by Greg Olson called Starvation Heights. The true story of murder and mayhem in the Northwest. Something along those lines. Wonderful book, but I think I got, it was like 15 hours long, so I think I got lost a little bit in all the information, and then I read a lot of stuff, so I like made my outline and then trashed it today at 12 o'clock and was like, this is terrible, so Katie had to come here and like wait for me to finish for 20 minutes or so.
Okay. So, all I got is time on my hand, babe.
Yeah, I mean, really, I think we all do at this point, but... So, the story we are talking about today is Dr. Linda Hazard, a.k.a. the Starvation Doctor.
Ooh-hoo-hoo!
So,
all right.
I did mention it a couple, I probably, like, within, like, I think it was, like, episode 4 or something, and said I was going to do it because I listened to the book, and then I read some pages, and I forgot about it, and then I was like, ooh, I got to finish. So, I did, and... I'm going to tell you this motherfucking story. And it's crazy.
Yes, queen. I'm ready.
All right. Let us begin. So, Linda was born as Linda Burfield to Montgomery and Susanna Burfield in 1867 in Carver County, Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Did you like it? Minnesota. She had upwards of 7 or 8 brothers. No one is quite sure how many. A lot of people said 8. A lot of people said 7, so I included both. She had a rather strange upbringing for the time, as her family was mostly vegetarian, which in 1867 was weird because there wasn't options. You know, they didn't have, like, texture, vegetable protein, and Morningstar stuff. There was no vegan. It was just vegetables.
They were the ultimate hippies.
For real, though, bro. They just ate, like, straight vegetables. There was sometimes meat put on the table, but there was no pressure for the kids to actually eat it. So they didn't have to if they didn't want to, which is cool. You know, kind of like, do you, boo-boo, whatever you want to do. So they really did have kind of a weird diet for the time. That was very rare. It's kind of, I feel like they weren't vegan, so they probably ate cheese and stuff. Weird diet for the times. One of the reasons people believe that she was obsessed with diet from a young age and getting rid of toxins from your body, which this is a true story, and it's insane. Other than the vegetarian diet she was made to eat as a child, or really offered to eat as a child for the most part, was that when she was little, her parents had a doctor visit their home to, obviously, like a checkup, you know. But back then, was it really a doctor? Who knows? He could have just showed up with like a briefcase of tools. Like, I poked people. It. Sure. Yep.
Got a stethoscope? Okay.
Come on in. Spoke and proud of my kids. So the doctor told the parents that the children were going to be sick soon and they needed to be pre-treated. So probably not a doctor. They were forced to take something called blue mass, which we know today as mercury.
I eat it all the time.
Just love playing with that old thermometer.
Nom, nom, nom.
Nom, 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 nom. Which obviously made them super sick. She talked about how they just had diarrhea for like 3 weeks. It was just constant stomach aches and diarrhea because you're taking mercury. That's just fucking mercury poisoning. So.
Or a cleanse.
Woof. Woof. So basically, it could have done damage elsewhere as well. I mean, obviously. For sure. She was probably younger at a developmental age where your brain is developing, and, you know, that could have caused damage for sure elsewhere. I'm surprised that it didn't kill them. But doctors back in 1867, well, probably like 1870-something now, but this in turn kind of made her obsessed about what she put in her body.
Understandable.
Right, totally. Don't eat mercury, folks. Linda was then married when she was 18, and she had 2 children, so young but not unheard of at the time, or for the time. She then began studying under a physician and fellow fasting specialist, a Dr. Edward Hooker Dewey.
Sounds like a whore to me.
It's funny. I'll show pictures and we'll post pictures. But his picture is exactly what his name should be. He's like this dude with glasses and has this pointy beard and he's like...
in a brassiere.
So he actually was a doctor, though. He went to medical school, had a medical license, was a doctor. He actually wrote a few books, one being the No Breakfast Diet, which... I don't think was that far-fetched. Especially, I mean, nowadays it's kind of, do you need to eat breakfast? Do you not need to eat breakfast? Stuff like
yes,
that. Breakfast
I'm
is...
I'm hungry.
It's not my favorite. I found out recently that I intermittently fast, and I had no idea.
Okay.
Because I eat dinner at... I get off at 3:30, I get home at 4, I normally cook by 5:30, and then I don't eat again until, like, 12 the next day. Didn't
that
realize.
That is disgusting.
It's just kind of a process that I've... come to just be normalized, so I'm really not even that hungry. Like, occasionally I'll do a protein shake, but other than that...
I don't even know what you're saying.
Yeah.
These aren't even words to me. Sounds like a bunch of mumbo jumbo.
Or occasionally I'll stop eating a sausage McMuffin, because they're fucking delicious. With cheese, obviously. He also believed that fasting could cure disease, but Linda had a few different views. She believed that one needed enemas to truly remove all diseases. So basically... he was a fasting specialist or fasting doctor. He wasn't as intense as she will turn out to be, but he believed that restricting food and diet could help cure disease, which isn't necessarily untrue, but I think he was more like what I said, like intermittent fasting and not eating breakfast or restricting certain things like carbs or bread or certain foods. Not for Linda. In 1898, when her training with Dr. Dewey ceased, Linda left her 2 kids and husband and moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota to begin her newfound career as a fasting specialist. That was a thing in 1897.
I have a question.
Sure. Yeah.
Did she leave them, or was she like, hey, you guys stay here, I'm going to go do this job real quick?
So she left him. They got a divorce.
Ooh.
Yeah, kind of bad. She just was like, see you, bye. I know that she didn't have a good daughter or a good daughter. She didn't have a good relationship with her daughter. Her daughter was basically like, fuck you, because she left when she was super young. But I know later in life she had a relationship with her son. It wasn't a good one. It was a pretty shitty one. She really kind of despised him, and he would do everything he could to kind of get her love. So he was a weird kind of weaselly, didn't come off as good in the book. So he was just kind of this dude that was around. Yeah, it was much later in life when they reconnected, and he contacted her. So basically, yes, she left them all.
She's just a piece of garbage.
She is a giant piece of garbage.
I won't judge, but...
Oh, just wait. Oh, it gets better.
I was just kidding. I'm a super hard judger. Okay.
Yeah, so. Well, I mean, it's pretty easy to judge someone who's just like, you know what?
Fuck this family.
I'm so much more important than you because I'm a fasting specialist now, so I'm going to go somewhere and do something important and you're not invited. Bye.
Awful.
Dick. So... Once arriving in Minneapolis, Linda's treatments, beliefs, and processes really began to take shape. Linda believed that the cause of most illnesses was impure blood, and the cause of impure blood was bad digestion. I will say, gut health is very important for a healthy lifestyle.
So yes.
I agree with that point, because gut health is the root of a lot of issues.
Yes.
A lot of issues. But... this is not the way you go about fixing it. So gut health was basically the route to all diseases. Linda's mantra was, and I quote, appetite is craving, hunger is desire, craving is never satisfied, but desire is relieved when want is supplied. So basically, it's like, you want that, but you can't eat it because it will satisfy your desires, and then you'll just want more, and you'll get fat, and your digestion will be ruined. So don't.
I mean, she's not wrong, because that's... literally, I'm living that.
Me too.
I want food. I eat food. Ugh. It's never enough.
My God,
I'm fat.
So fat since our
life. But you know what? I'm okay with myself.
I'm understanding of what I've become. Also, it's my first year of marriage, so I'm allowed to blow up a little bit. Also, I'm making us beef stroganoff after this. So fat.
Not mad about it.
Not mad about it.
All right, so...
so Linda then actually began treating people. You ready for this?
No. Yes.
Their treatments / prescriptions included, and I quote, 1 to 2 cups of tomato or asparagus broth daily. You want to know what tomato broth is?
The LaCroix of tomatoes.
So, that was a good one. No, it's even grosser than that. Could you imagine tomato LaCroix? Actually, that would probably be pretty good in a Bloody Mary. Give it like a little fizzy.
No chance. No. No. The whole point is that it's gross.
Michelas, yeah, it's gross. But there's always a place for something. So she would take a can of tomatoes, boil it down for about an hour, and then press the strained canned tomato juices into a cup and make you drink it.
So nothing. You get nothing.
You get nothing. You
just
get some water.
Drink a cup of water.
Flavored with tomatoes.
Just drink a cup of water.
Gross.
Okay.
Mile-long walks daily. So most of the time they were longer than a mile, but hour-long enemas. And some of them would go longer than an hour.
I'm sorry. What?
Not even kidding. Not kidding. She believed that you should have hours-long enemas. So just put a hose up your butt and spray water into your intestines. Yep. Oh, just wait. It gets better.
Besides
gets so much better.
Besides being unpleasant.
Horrible. Like torture.
Besides being unpleasant, okay, you know what? No. I'm just going to let you continue. I have so many thoughts.
Just
go.
Oh, I know. So she also included an hour-long vigorous massage. Just wait. Which basically, I'll explain. Linda Hazard, or Linda Burfield, she is now, was a burly woman. She was fit and big and had fucking guns, okay? This is what she would do. She would basically just punch you in the stomach, back, and forehead while she screamed, "Eliminate!" and other exorcism-like phrases at the top of her lungs.
So you're just getting the shit kicked out of you.
Yep.
Literally, the shit kicked out of you while you have an enema going on.
Hours long enema.
I'm, okay.
And listen.
People went along with this.
She used to do this in a bathtub.
It's a good place to keep a body.
Except for if the water was filled up, their shit would just be floating around there with them. All up in the water.
It's protein.
Is it?
Drink the shit water. It's just like the tomato water.
Is it protein? I'm not sure. Is it? I don't know what poop's made of.
I don't know. I guess it depends what you ate.
That is a good question. But I know back then they were obsessed with poop because they thought...
I'm sorry. All right. So keep going with your story.
Clean poop is just, good poop.
I'm getting so distracted with all these disgusting things.
Oh, so many things. So this was prescribed to patients for more than 40 days.
I just choked on my white cloth. I'm sorry.
Sometimes up to 50.
Nope. That's a hard no for me.
That's a hard fucking pass.
I am clenching my butt cheeks so hard right now.
You literally shove a garden hose up there. Dude.
No. No.
Oof.
No.
Yep, yep. So, until finally in 1902, one of Linda's patients, a Gertrude Young, died after attempting to complete her fasting treatment prescribed by Dr. Burfield. She died on the 40th day of her fast. That's 40th nice. Fucking day. Also, I'm sorry for calling her doctor. She's not a doctor. It's Mrs. Burfield.
That's fine.
But the 40th day. So all she was drinking for those 40 days was 1 to 2 cups of tomato or asparagus broth daily.
I wonder why she didn't live.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to know what she died of?
I don't mean to take it lightly, but I'm not... I'm sorry.
Listen, this is like... I'm
not taking it lightly. I don't mean to make it sound like I'm taking it lightly. That is awful. But when you look back, obviously, hindsight is 20/20, and
well,
did she die of starvation?
Yeah.
Wow, there it is.
Weird. So I feel like back then, too, there was a ton of snake oil and this tincture. I mean, they fucking sold heroin in a bottle that you could buy over the counter. They
didn't those really, days.
Yeah, right? They didn't really know what they were doing, but the FDA, like, also didn't exist, so it was kind of just like, you can make whatever you want and make all these insane claims, and nothing was really regulated. So, I get, like, if she was really sick and not feeling well, because they didn't give, like, her past. So, she could have had something that was actually wrong with her and was like, this
sure.
has to happen. And
I mean, she used to eat mercury, so...
no, I'm talking about Gertrude. So, they can just say that... She could have really had something wrong with her, and Dr. Linda could have said, made all these, like, ridiculous claims, like, oh, I cured this person with cancer, or I cured this person of this ulcer, I cured this person, and no one, there is no record of it, there is no one reining her in from what she's
sure.
doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, it is a little bit of a different time, so people were a little bit more gullible. So, the coroner autopsied the body. It was determined that this woman's cause of death was starvation. Duh. That's what happens when you drink broth for 40 fucking days. The coroner wanted to press charges, but back in the day, because Linda wasn't a licensed doctor and the woman was a willing participant under her care, no charges could be filed.
That's unfortunate.
Unfortunate. After Gertrude had died due to her treatment, Linda then said, idea, light bulb. She went ahead and wrote a book titled Fasting for the Cure of Disease. And got it published. Yep.
Did she put in the disclaimer that someone has died off this?
Mm-mm.
No, why would she?
Why would she?
I mean, that's poor publishing.
No, that's right. Goes back to...
Not all PR is good PR.
It goes back to, she can put in whatever the fuck she wants without actually having any evidence to back the claims that she's saying. So she can just make some shit up and just be like, look it, this is what happened.
Sure.
It didn't. After all of this passes, and after the publication of her book, Linda meets and falls in love with a man named Samuel Hazard. Sam was a grifter, a drunk, and a con artist. He was actually kicked out of the army for writing fraudulent checks and misappropriating funds.
Hazard!
For real. But he was attractive, and what you wanted in a man. He was tall, he was big, he was attractive. he was in the army. She didn't really realize that he got kicked out of the army for misappropriating funds. He was also an alcoholic. And I will tell you a fun fact at the end. That is insane. Surprise! When she met Sam, he was already married to another woman named Viva. So basically what happened was Linda had a office in the same building that Sam worked, and they eventually became kind of friends. One day, Viva got a letter in the mail from an anonymous person saying that Linda and Sam were having an affair. At this point, fortunately for Viva, they weren't. They were just kind of colleagues, and that was the end of it. And then she got some more crazy mail saying that Sam was in love with Linda and all this crazy nonsense. So Viva told Sam he was no longer allowed to see Linda. And Sam reluctantly agreed and said, "It's fine. We were business partners, but if it's going to make you unhappy, no big deal." He told Linda that, and fucking Linda was like, "Listen, bitch. I don't think so. Don't fucking think so." So Sam then kind of disappears for the night. Says he was going to go somewhere, didn't come back. Viva was super worried. He then comes back with her father, who was a high up board of representatives or whatever. So he had a lot of power and money at the time. He shows up with her father, and Sam walks in the room and goes, "We're not married." And she goes, "What? Like, fuck, we're not." And he goes, "No, we're not. We're not legally married."
Oh.
And she goes, "What are you talking about? We had a marriage certificate. We had a ceremony with a fucking priest. What do you mean?" Little did she know that the previous evening, Sam and Linda had gotten married.
Oh.
Yep. So she finds out about this and is like, "Fuck you, bro." So, I don't know how, but he basically, like, destroyed their marriage certificate, and I think because he may have been connected, they destroyed any evidence of it somehow. So, they went to trial because she sued him for polygamy, and then he was found guilty and went to serve 2 years in prison because of it.
Good twist in the plot.
Yeah, well, legit, Linda. Is he really that great? He sounds like kind of a dick. Just saying.
Yeah.
I would say so. I would fucking say so. When Sam was in prison, he actually attempted to reconcile with his wife, Viva, but Linda was having none of that BS. So I think he tried to reconcile with Viva because her family was very well connected and powerful and she had money, but Linda was a very domineering person, if you couldn't tell. She beat people and got people to do things that they probably shouldn't have. Definitely shouldn't have. So eventually she visited him in prison, and it was right before he was released. And because of this, Sam chose to leave with Linda and start over in Seattle, as this was Linda's best option, as the state of Washington had a loophole in their medical licensing and it grandfathered in certain providers of alternative medicine who lacked a medical degree. This allowed Linda to call herself a motherfucking doctor.
Oh, man.
Isn't that hilarious? No medical training. No anything other than a couple years under some other... I'm sorry. Everything I read said quack. So some other quack doctor.
But and you said he was like a legit doctor.
He still had some crazy beliefs. But he was... Okay. I think as far as the fasting goes, it was not anywhere near 40 days of awful torture.
Right.
It was like fast for a normal, like, right, or like fast for 5 days, which, you know, normal people, like people do today, or eat intermittent fasting, things like that.
I still don't believe in that, but all right.
I mean, certain religions do, you know.
No, I know.
And it's not complete fasting. You obviously hydrate really well and things like that. So Seattle was actually much more open and more off the, kind of to more off the beaten path medicines. Practices like naturopathy and homeopathy and the like. So she was kind of accepted a little bit. She really began to take on almost a cult following, and her plans really began to take shape. So she really wanted to build a health sanitarium, and there kind of found a way to complete her dream. Rich people who have a sense of unease or even unwellness. Fucking rich white women, essentially. Well, and some men. I can't say all white women are basically the backer of her fucking life. Because why not? If you have more money than you know what to do with and you don't feel well, let's try some shit out, you know?
Sure.
It still happens to this day, dude. I have to say. In 1908, one of her first patients, Daisy Haglund, her parents owned Akit Elkit Point, which is a huge piece of the land in Puget Sound, right outside of Seattle. So these people were very wealthy. So they actually owned like a huge portion of land right on the ocean.
Oh, man.
So they were very, very wealthy.
Yeah, they had money.
Yeah, very, very wealthy. Although back then it was a little unsettled, but still, I mean, that was very sought after land. Daisy died of starvation after her 40th day or so under Dr. Hazard's care. Weird. But her cause of death was due to stomach cancer, listed on her autopsy report. Guess who the person was performing the autopsy?
Was it Linda?
Oh my God, it was Linda!
What? How is that even possible?
Because no one gave a fuck in the early 1900s, swear to God. She performed her own autopsy on the own bodies and determined their cause of death.
Sure, so she's just going through and picking whatever. All right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And she can write whatever she wanted. She can say whatever she wanted. No one is going to question her because she's named herself the doctor. Wouldn't it be amazing if I could just walk around and going, no, 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 you can't call me Mrs. Hazard. It's Dr. Hazard because I want it to be.
I mean, no, I don't think that sounds amazing. Maybe for you, but...
Well, I mean, I'm just saying...
No, I know. I get it.
The amount of schooling that you have to go through is fucking crazy to become a doctor. And right. She legit had 2 years of training with some other quack doctor who... And then just went to Washington and was like, I'm a doctor. It's not Mrs. Hazard anymore. It's Dr. Linda Hazard. Because of some loophole, which doesn't make any sense. Obviously does not exist anymore. So that same year, she would kill a Mrs. Elgin Cox and a Mrs. Ida Wilcox. So basically, she found people who have more money than they know what to do with, suffer from very minuscule issues like indigestion or acid reflux or headaches, stomach aches, things like that. Treat them, get them to sign everything that they own over to her, like land, money, jewelry, etc., and then assist them in slowly starving to death and take everything the person had. And then they die, and then on to the next one.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. So she was a winner. Really, really just someone we should all aspire to be, you know? Mm. You know? Like, inspirational.
I mean, she's a go-getter, that's for sure.
I mean, no, if she's anything but, it's a fucking go-getter. One of her best moves was to play on tourists, since back then people might not know where you are exactly and wouldn't come looking till after some time. So while she played on rich white people and also rich males, there was also this play where she would go after tourists and be like, well, give me this and you'll feel better and it'll be worth it. But there was a lot of people who came over from, you know, Britain and those places and with tons of money. And would go to buy land or portions of land and start, you know, building a place to live and survive and all that stuff. And they would die of starvation and have 70 cents in their bank account. So the following year, we have two more deaths. This time, it was Blanche T. Tyndall, Viola Heaton. I'm sorry, three more deaths. And then there was Eugene Stanley Wakeland. Now, Eugene's cause of death was actually a bullet to the back of the head.
Well, that's different.
Isn't it? No one really knows what happened or how this happened, but he was under the treatment of Dr. Hazard, and no one ever pressed the issue, so no one ever found out what happened.
Good, good, good. Okay. What the fuck?
I swear to God. I was like, wait, but what? And that was the end of it. So she performed her own autopsy, pulled out all of his fucking organs, probably pulled the bullet out of his head, and dumped him in an unmarked grave. So, winner, winner, chicken dinner.
This lady's a psycho.
Is she? Is that weird? As if it wasn't suspicious enough, this happened right after Dr. Hazard convinced him to sign over his entire estate to her.
Listen.
Pause for effect.
I don't even like paying the $20 copay for something that is completely necessary, like when I have an ear infection. There is no way you are getting me to sign my entire
life
over for something that is completely unnecessary.
You mean starving yourself to death?
You couldn't pay me to do that.
Is that unnecessary? It was such a different time, though, and I feel that people with money were a little bit more naive, and they, if they weren't feeling well, they trusted her because she could make all these insane claims. Sure. And she actually had, which I believe she paid, people who were there actually, like, speaking for her. Mm. And there were people who survived her treatment and spoke very highly of what they went through. So, very fucking bizarre, but still, you couldn't, are you kidding?
No.
What in the fuck are you thinking? But also, if he had fasted for that long and was that dehydrated, you are just kind of delusional. Yeah, you really don't know what's happening. So she probably could have convinced him to do that when he was weak enough to just be like, just whatever, you know.
Take it all, I don't care.
Yeah, basically. So in 1910, we have three more deaths. Maude Whitney, Earl Edward Urban, and L.E. Rader, who was actually a part of the Washington House of Representatives. He died after a 29-day fast. Fortunately for Dr. Hazard, Rader owned a large piece of property across Puget Sound in Olalla, Washington, called Wilderness Heights. Do you want to know what she did right before he died?
Got his land.
Oh my God, you're so smart!
Sometimes.
You're so smart. She got him to sign over his entire estate, including the portion of land called Wilderness Heights in Olalla, Mother Evan, Washington. She now had the land she needed to begin construction on her sanitarium. So basically, her sanitarium consisted of her house and a very few small cabins where her patients would stay. The author of the book Starvation Heights actually spoke to some of the people who lived there when the sanitarium was active, and they remembered these people who were skin and bones, being forced to walk and barely able to stand, going into town and begging people to feed them.
Oh my God.
Begging. Could you imagine? These people were 70 fucking pounds as adults.
That's disgusting.
Begging people to feed them. Uh-huh. Most people would actually take pity on them and give them what they could. This was a regular effing occurrence.
How are... I know... 1910, there had to be some kind of police, right?
So this is what I understand. So Seattle was actually, this is right around the time when Seattle, after the Great Seattle Fire. So Seattle was burned to the motherfucking ground.
Okay.
So Seattle is actually known as a kind of Rough Rider area where there wasn't a lot of policing because there was literally nothing. If you look up pictures of the Seattle Great Fire, it burned to the ground. Similar to this, the Great Chicago Fire. Okay. But there was still something standing. There was nothing. So people were kind of in the middle of rebuilding. This was also right outside of Seattle. And it was a very heavy Scandinavian-Norwegian area that they kind of settled. So a lot of people didn't speak English. A lot of people were like, what the fuck is going on?
All and right, they kind of so just explains that.
Yeah, they kind of just wanted to mind their own business and didn't really get involved. But there were people who took pity on them, and they definitely gave them food, especially a shop owner that was in town. She always would give them, like, extra bread or anything that she could. For real. And they paid for this. They fucking paid for this. So, what I'm going to do now. Earl Edward Erdman, who passed away under her care, kept a diary. So, he was a civil engineer in Seattle. And this details his diet and what he went through. So there's a lot of dates. I'm not going to read all of them, but I'll give you a basic synopsis of what her diet consists of. So February 1st, saw Dr. Hazard and began treatment this date. No breakfast, mashed soup dinner, mashed soup supper. So probably real good. Mm-hmm. February 5th through the 7th, one orange breakfast, mashed soup dinner, mashed soup supper. Oh, so supper... Dinner was lunch and supper was dinner back then because they're, you know, old. 1910 was a weird time. So February 9th through the 11th, one orange breakfast, strained soup dinner, strained soup supper. So 9th through the 11th, that's all he ate. February 12th, one orange breakfast, one orange dinner, one orange supper. February 15th, one cup hot strained tomato soup night and morning. So that tomato soup is the gross broth she makes you drink. Ooh. February 16th, one cup hot strained tomato soup, AM and PM, slept better last night, head quite dizzy, eyes yellow streaked and red. Mm. February 19th, called on Dr. Dawson, today at his home, slept well Saturday night. February 20th, ate strained juice of two small oranges at 10 a.m., dizzy all day, ate strained juice of two small oranges at 5 p.m., February 22nd, ate juice of two small oranges at 10 a.m. Backache today and right side of below ribs. February 24th, slept better Wednesday night. Kind of frontal headache in a.m. Ate two small oranges at 10 a.m. Ate 1.5 cups of hot tomato soup at 6 p.m. Heart hit up to 95 minute and sweat considerable. So his heart rate was way elevated. February 25th, slept pretty well Thursday night. Ate 1.5 cups tomato broth 11 a.m. Ate 1.5 cups tomato broth 6 p.m. Pain right below ribs. February 26th, did not sleep so very well Friday night. Pain in right side, just below ribs and back. Pain quite in night. Ate 1.5 cups tomato broth at 10:45 a.m. Ate 2.5 small oranges at 4:30 p.m. Felt better afternoon for the last week. The diet continued more or less unchanged until his hospitalization on March 28th. He died that afternoon just before his co-worker was to transfuse blood. So just a little snippet in what torture these people went through and put themselves through. That was a full month of what, I mean, a condensed version, but the ones I didn't read and the days I didn't read were just ate an orange all fucking day.
And soup LaCroix.
And soup LaCroix.
Or I should say tomato
LaCroix. Tomato LaCroix. Yeah, isn't that... There is nothing. That's nothing. That's a month worth of food. I know it goes through really quickly, but that's what he ate all month.
No.
He ate like 500 calories in all a month.
All of that is one snack.
Yep. That's a snack. I eat...
Maybe two if I'm being generous.
Yeah, honestly. He ate maybe 500-600 calories in a month.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so I wonder why he died. Question mark. So at this point, people are starting to notice that there are people of wealth and status entering Seattle and winding up dead and penniless, starved to death. Yes. So the newspapers start to post headlines like female doctor kills another patient and the like. Mm. So she's actually making headlines at this point. But again, they couldn't arrest her because patients are willingly entering her care and willingly signed over their estates and belongings and all that nonsense, so they don't have, like, the sound mind typed deal. But I feel like eventually it wouldn't even matter because they would be so delusional.
Correct.
It would just be like, she could just get them declared incompetent and she can take whatever she wanted anyway. Mm-hmm. So in 1911, they lost 5 more people. Frank Sutherland, C.A. Harrison, Ivan Flux, Louis Ray. Linda would always do the autopsies by herself, and she would sometimes even pull out organs and show them to relatives who came to claim the bodies and show them how they were in such bad shape.
I have nothing to say on that.
Mm-hmm. She would actually leave them out in her room and dry them out a little bit.
That's disgusting.
Yep. But things start to take a turn when she meets and begins to treat 2 sisters named Claire and Isadora Williamson. So we're going to talk about the Williamson sisters. Claire and Isadora were very, very wealthy British heiresses. And when I say very wealthy, I mean they had like $2 or $3 million in the bank and now our money. So what I understood, and I probably am completely wrong for even saying that, but what I understood was their inheritance was like hundreds of millions.
Wait, hundreds or?
Hundreds of millions in our time.
Oh my. Okay.
So they had money. Isadora also is known as Dora.
And they came in and they were like, hey, heard you were starving people. Take all our money.
They were so sweet though. It's so hard to be mad at them, but I'm kind of mad at them. So they both lost their parents at a very young age and they were raised by their nurse, Margaret Conway, or as they called her, Tootie.
Tootie.
Tootie. They had an almost mother-daughter relationship with her. So they lost their mother. I believe they said, Claire's the older one, I believe. And their mother died when she was 14, so the other one was 2 years younger, so 12 or 11-ish, depending on, right. So they were very close. They grew up and never got married, but they did everything together. They had more money than they knew what to do with. So when they were old enough, Margaret moved back to her native Australia, and Dora and Claire traveled the world together, which is kind of dope. I mean, they were just the best of friends and loved each other so dearly, and it's amazing and it's awesome. It does sound like Claire and Dora had a great life. I mean, they went everywhere. They've gone to Australia and the Netherlands and Sweden and all these places, especially back in that era. It's difficult to go to those places. And they did. They fucking did it. Real good. That sounded sexual.
Was it real good?
So, while they had their adventures and travels and they loved each other, the girls complained of minor issues. Claire was told she had a dropped uterus. Basically said that the treatment for a dropped uterus was to soak a cotton ball in boramide and shove it up your vagina all day long.
I'm going to sound stupid, but I don't know what boramide
is. It's not something you want to shove in your vagina.
Is it a chemical?
Mm-hmm.
Good, good, good. Sounds natural.
Good, 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 good. Yeah, that's what she was doing. So that's probably why.
Claire didn't feel so good.
Dora had suffered from minor headaches and some indigestion and was kind of like, oh, my glands are swollen. So it wasn't anything that would make you, like, go to a doctor. Or maybe go see a doctor, but, like, they would just be like, just eat better, you know, like normal stuff. Or stop doing this or try this, you know?
Yeah, that's fair.
Basically rich, white, British people problems.
Sure.
But all in all, the girls loved each other, and from what I've heard during the book, they were wonderful people, and they were very sweet, and loved their family dearly for what they had, and because they had, her mother died, but they had an uncle in the States, and they were very sweet, and very generous with when they go on their adventures, like Africa and stuff, they would buy trinkets, and some of them were expensive, some were a little cheaper, but they would, like, mail them out to their family.
Aww.
They were very sweet together, and such great people. So both were very open to alternative medicines. Again, rich white people. And lived a different lifestyle as they were already vegetarians, which, again, was very kind of off-putting as a sign at the time. They didn't wear corsets, also very weird. They weren't married, which was also very weird at the time. So they were a bit eccentric, but again, people really enjoyed them. The girls had a place at the Empress Hotel, which, as I understand, is bougie as fuck. And this is where they would find an ad for fasting for the cure of disease. I probably should have included. They were on vacation in Vancouver.
All right.
Both sisters get a copy of the book, and they both read it and contact Dr. Hazard right away to begin treatment.
This is the beginning of the end.
You're so right, though. Good call.
I had a feeling.
Woof. So Claire and Dora begin treatment with Dr. Hazard, and she sets them up in the Seattle Beaumont apartment. So basically what happened was they messaged her or telegrammed her, like, fucking SOS'd her, sent a passenger pigeon. I'm not really sure.
I'm going to go with pigeon.
Sure. Let's do pigeon. And they said, we're really interested, blah, 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 blah. We want to go to your sanitarium. And she said, well, the sanitarium's not completely set up yet. So I'm going to give me all your rent money and I'll set you up in an apartment.
Sure.
Sure. So give me all your money and I'll pay your rent for you. Fishy AF. She begins them on a diet that consists of a cup of broth made from canned tomatoes 2 times a day. She then begins to give them hours-long enemas in the bathtub, so much so that they both begin passing out. She constructs a canvas overthrow for the bathtub to prevent them from falling underwater and drowning if they pass out while in the middle of these enemas. Now, I told you that they gave, like, hours-long enemas in the beginning. These were 8-hour long enemas, so much so that they both would pass out.
They literally had nothing in them.
Nothing. And your intestines were just goop. Enemas are not good for you, FYI. They're very hard on your intestines and your intestinal tract. They might make you feel better, but they are not good for you. So The girls were waiting patiently to be taken on to be taken out to her sanitarium as they slowly began to deteriorate. Eventually, the only people the girls would see would be people who worked for Dr. Hazard, so nurses and the like, lawyers, things like that. But eventually, Claire and Dora were both so weak that they could no longer walk without fainting.
Oh my God. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yep. So then Dr. Hazard decides that it's time to start getting signatures from the girls, and eventually was put in charge of most of their inheritance and actually convinced them to take some of their most precious jewels that were like her mother's and some of her father's watches and pocket watches and stuff, and to store them in her safe for safekeeping, even though they were in an apartment that had its own safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Right. Linda then is finally able to bring the girls to Olalla and put them up at the sanitarium in their own cabin, which was very basic. No heat, no electricity. And at this point, the sisters weighed only 70 pounds each.
Oh my God, no. No.
70 pounds. When they arrived at the cabins, the sisters were separated just so the sisters couldn't see how awful each other looked, because they probably both would have fucking passed out.
Yeah. They would have been like, oh, hey, do you look as bad as, or do I look as bad as you do?
Yeah, what the
fuck?
Do
you look like shit?
And I mean, your hair falls the fuck out of your head. So they were both half bald and weighed 70 pounds and were basically skeletons.
Oh my God.
Walking among people. So that's fun. Yep. Claire was then moved into the Hazard's home, as she was the weaker of the two at this point. And Dr. Hazard forced her to sign more documents, giving her more access to their fortune. What I understand is Claire was always the more feisty one, and Dora was always more subdued.
Okay.
She kind of had shyness issues and anxiety, where Claire was kind of more, let's go and let's do it, and a little bit more flighty. So I wonder why she would keep Claire away from Dora, especially the one who, you know, would be like, I want to fucking leave. This lady's fucking crazy.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess Dora was a little bit more easy to manipulate. At this point, Claire is really not doing well and somehow manages to get a telegram sent to their beloved Tootie all the way in Australia.
Oh, God bless.
God bless. Tootie for the win. The letter was rather unclear, as you can imagine, because she was... Okay, so I'm going to backtrack and go to the book. And basically what happened was, Claire was going for one of her mandatory walks, and by this point, it was just a crawl, and she crawled out of the woods to a kid and was like, I am begging you, take this telegram to the post office, or to the shop, because that was also the post office, and send it out. And what the telegram said was rather unclear, like I said. It was kind of like, May 8th, this boat's leaving port, be here. And Tootie was like, what? That's so vague. I don't know what this means. And eventually got her, like, mama bear on and was like, something's fucking wrong. So she got on a boat right away. The boat was like, we're full. And she's like, I don't give a fuck if you're full. I will fight all of you.
Yes.
I am getting on this motherfucking boat. And yes. She gets on the boat. She gets on that boat. Tootie for the win, like I said. Once she arrives in Washington, she is met by Sam Hazard at the port and is told that Claire had passed away.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That she was sick and did not survive. So the last thing that Claire did was for her sister, essentially, because she knew she was going. And she crawled her ass through the woods and shoved this thing in someone's hand. And that little boy made a decision, and he made the right decision.
Oh, God bless.
That little boy saved Dora's life. So Sam basically just kind of told her, and obviously Tootie was devastated because she raised these girls. They were her mother for all intents and purposes. And Sam just kind of shrugged his shoulders and dealt with her for the remainder of the trip across Puget Sound to the sanitarium, which was about 2.5 hours.
Oh my God.
So that had to have been real fun. Upon her arrival, Dr. Hazard met them, and the first thing Tootie noticed was that Dr. Hazard had on pieces of Claire's fucking jewelry and Claire's clothing.
Which obviously she would recognize, because that's the family heirlooms and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And there was multiple times where the girls actually visited her in Australia. Like, that was their mom.
Yeah.
So she knew.
Or their second mom, we should say.
Right, their second mom. Their adoptive mama.
Yes.
She knew right away something was not right. after she and Dr. Hazard had spoken with Tootie, saying that, or they'd spoken together, saying that Claire had succumbed to what she only described as illness, she explained that Dora was hopelessly insane.
Sure.
Convenient. So Claire's dead, Dora's fucking crazy, and Tootie is like, what the fuck is going on here? I talked to them a couple months ago and they were fine. She then asks Tootie if she would like to see Claire's body. She reluctantly agrees and heads out to the Butterworth and Sons funeral home.
Right.
Not kidding.
There's an ominous feeling right now.
Mm-hmm. Upon her arrival, they show her the body, and Margaret knows right away this wasn't Claire. Although she was thin, she had the wrong color hair and face.
Oh, you can recognize a face. Got it.
Because she lost so much weight, Dr. Hazard was like, oh, no, it's her. She just lost so much weight. She was sickly and ill, and this is what happened, and we embalmed the body. And it was also very, very intense for her because they didn't embalm bodies in Australia. They didn't embalm bodies in England at this time either. They just buried them.
Okay.
So she was like, what the fuck is happening? And knew that Claire was British, and she would never have wanted this.
No.
So she was like, no. Okay, so Tootie then says, yeah, I don't think so. And then says she isn't leaving and says she's a nurse and she'll take care of Dora. And Dr. Hazard finally says yes and then attempted to win her over. So Tootie was like, fuck you. I'm not leaving at all. So Tootie's kind of a badass. And she was also small and Australian and super cool. So I was like, I really would have been friends with Tootie. When Tootie finally sees Dora, she's 50 pounds.
Oh my God.
She is 50 fucking pounds. That is a toddler. And she is a grown woman.
Well, that's not a toddler, but it's a grade schooler.
Yeah.
That's...
Oh yeah, it's not a toddler. I'm sorry. That'd be a real big toddler.
That'd be an obese toddler.
I'm sorry. That's what you're right. It'd be a grade schooler.
But...
So she...
That is...
Yeah.
Not...
The size of a small grade schooler... She can't sit without being in pain. She cannot bring her lips over her teeth anymore.
She's so dehydrated.
So she's walking around like this.
Oh my God.
Like a fucking skeleton. That's what she looked like. And she had bald spots all over her head. She basically didn't have hair. Her eyes were sunken in. She just, could you imagine what a 50, she was like,
no.
27? A 50 pound 27-year-old would look like.
No.
After 50 days of helping Dora, she was actually sneaking in food and trying to add things to the broth, like flour, rice, anything to get Dora more sustenance. So flour is actually a great idea. Get some carbs and it thickens it, and there's, so it'll really like kind of help thicken you up a little bit.
Yeah.
But she actually tried to add cream once and Dora actually choked.
Oh, my.
Because of how much her body did not know what to do with fat.
Oh, no.
She fucking choked on cream and broth. So there's that. At this point, after 50 days of helping, she realizes that Dora is going to die. So she tells Dr. Hazard, she, like, walks up to her and was like, listen, bitch, I'm done. We're leaving. Dr. Hazard says, like hell you are. I've been appointed as her legal guardian, and if you leave, I will have you arrested. Because she had Dora declared legally insane and was appointed her guardian. This bitch. So, but, nuh-uh. Tootie said, no, I'm gonna go. Dora, you stay here. I'll be right back. And at this point, dude, I can't even... Dora, in her very weak state, how she managed to do this, I don't know. Literally put, like, a desk in front of the door of her cabin and sat in a corner all night waiting for Tootie because she was so terrified that someone would come and kill her.
Yeah.
Because Tootie left.
Yes.
Yep. And she was 50 pounds. Could you imagine how long that took? Probably took all night. And it's a miracle she didn't die because any of exertion, you would just pass out.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, Tootie leaves to go find Dora and Claire's uncle. Like I said, her mom that died had a brother in the States who was also in Washington, who just so happened to be a motherfucking lawyer. They have been in contact with him most of their lives. They've seen him a few times, but they were very, like I said, their family was very close. They used to send him trinkets and they would talk. So this motherfucker goes up to fucking the sanitarium. Basically is like, what the fuck? My niece is dead. No one told me about it. Why has no one told me about it? What is going on here? Dr. Hazard basically says, you can't take her. We are in charge of her and she owes us money. And her uncle basically says, I'll give you $500 and you're going to release her to us. At this point, Dr. Hazard has taken almost $10,000 worth of their things. Mm-mm-mm. Yep. So the Hazards reluctantly agree and they release Dora. Woo! Go Tootie! Go Uncle!
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So when Dora, and this is a long track, I mean, I felt so bad for this reading or listening to this book. People stare at her. I mean, she was 50 pounds. People were just like, how are you standing? I don't understand. For months. I mean, it takes so long to gain that weight back. White Claw.
White Claw.
So what happened in the book was she was on the boat to get across Puget Sound to go back to Seattle. And she hears a mother talking to her son. And her son is just staring because he's a young kid. And is like, what the hell is with that lady? And her mother says, don't pay attention to her son. She came from Starvation Heights. So that's where it came from.
Dude, so like people knew about this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh. They did. So when Dora is well enough again, and she gets well, and she gets chubby and cute, and I'll show you a picture, she's adorable. She was fucking determined to get Dr. Hazard shut down for good, and eventually contacted the British consulate in Tacoma, and got approved for consul representation. His name was Lucien Agassi, and this dude kind of kicked ass, because it wasn't the first British, I don't even want to say royal, but prominent British citizen that had been killed at the hands of Dr. Hazard. They were like, fuck you. Right. And there was so much in the book, if you guys want to read it, but there's really a lot about the county that Olalla was in. Olalla was very small, and like I said, was a foreign or a, what do they call those things? Immigrant community. They didn't have a ton of money, and they basically wanted to have the trial there, and they were like, we can't afford this. We absolutely cannot afford this. So Dora was like, fuck you, I'll front you the money.
But also, so she fronts the money.
Then Lucien goes back to the crown in England and he says, I'll front you the money. Or I will basically pay you fucking back for fronting the money. So they're like all about this bitch going to prison. Well, and who wouldn't be?
Do it.
Hell yeah, Dora. Get your fucking, let's go. Let's go. They eventually get enough people and spend enough money to the county, and they eventually press charges of murder on Dr. Hazard for the death of Claire Williamson, which they don't even know how she really died, because
I'm sorry, starvation.
Well, they don't know. She could have been poisoned. She could have
because with their body.
It wasn't her motherfucking body. So the county then starts digging into everything that has been happening in the sanitarium and realized that at least 12 people had died under the treatment of Dr. Hazard alone since the opening of the sanitarium. So a lot of people...
That doesn't even count the people
that died previously.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but No, yes. Okay.
You are exactly right. That doesn't count the people who had died previously. She did have a few people on her side, however, who have claimed that she cured them from their ailments. So there were a few people that survived that had like ulcers and things like that. So they didn't eat and then they survived. And then eventually she drained them of money and was basically like, just eat food again. So she like tapered them into food and they survived. And they were like, oh, I'm cured. But I don't see how that would cure anybody of anything. But whatever, you know, whatever makes you happy, bro. So basically her stance was that she was being discriminated against because she was a woman and the men were just jealous because she was curing people and they were not. So her stance in all the newspapers, because this was kind of like a big thing. She was already in the newspapers
well,
and
you
people knew who
think.
She were. Right. So it was kind of like a big hullabaloo way back in the day.
Hullabaloo. There's that word again.
I do love that word. The trial then begins, and I'm not going to get into it because it's very boring. It's just a lot of people... He said, she said, because there is no real evidence because she fucking was the one who autopsied the bodies and the only records they had to go on was the records she fucking created. But she is found guilty of manslaughter and is sentenced from 2 to 20 years in prison.
That's it?
Well, okay. In her defense, you cannot prove she killed Claire. They don't have the appropriate body at this point. And okay. Honestly, Claire was there willingly. So correct. I okay. think that was probably yes. a win, to be honest. So guess how long she served?
1 year.
Two.
All right, so she served the minimum.
Basically. So she served 2 years, got off on good behavior on December 26, 1915. She was released on parole. And then, for some fucking reason, the governor pardoned her. Or the governor pardoned her. No fucking idea why.
All right, so then what?
Right? Man, this is why we need a new YouTube channel, because Katie's face was hilarious. So then, her and her husband moved to fucking New Zealand, where she was allowed to practice as a dietitian and an osteopath until 1920. So she went there and did the same fucking thing. I will say, I tried to look up if I know people died, but it was very vague, and I didn't get any names, but there was statements that I found people saying that people had died under her care, obviously. I mean, obviously. Yep. So then she returned to Olalla, Washington, and opened a new sanitarium. But at this point, she was stopped because of her license. So she had to open it as a school, not a sanitarium.
School for what?
Healthy learning. Or just starving yourself. That's what's up.
Don't eat, guys.
Just don't eat. I'm going to teach you how to not eat and then die.
It's called Tomato La Croix.
That should be the Institute of Tomato La Croix. She didn't get as many people as she thought, though, because I think at this point she was infamous, and literally all the kids, like, they thought she was a witch. I mean, I don't blame her. She looks like a witch. I'll show you photos. And it will all be posted on Insta, so you'll all get to see them, too. So there wasn't as many people as she thought, but she did get some, unfortunately. It actually burned to the ground in 1935. She had 100 beds, but thankfully there was only 12 students, and nobody was killed or hurt. So, you want to hear the most satisfying thing in the world, though?
She died in the fire.
Around the age of 70, Linda got super sick, like cancer sick, and begins a fast of her own. She dies in 1938 of starvation while attempting her own fasting cure.
That is karma if I've ever heard of.
Uh-huh. But at the end of all of her reign of terror and all of this bullshit, she is attributed to about 40 deaths. Yep. And in the worst possible way. I mean, starving to death.
That's a slow, I could not think of a
more
death.
Yeah. I could not think of a more painful. I mean, these people survived 50-day fast without food. Could you imagine how torturous? The sisters couldn't get up without fainting. But eventually Dora did get well, and I'll post a picture of her when she's well, because she has this long brown hair and she's gorgeous. But it was very hard. Like, Dora was devastated. She blamed herself for Claire's death, and
I mean, how do you not?
She was her best friend in the world. And I didn't really get what happened after Dora, but I'm assuming she went back with Tootie and you know, was happy, but
hopefully.
So I have to tell you this one thing that I didn't include because it didn't kind of flow with the story. Because no one gives a fuck about Sam Hazard. Sam Hazard was a drunkard, as I said. The kids gave witness that he would walk into town once a week with a briefcase. And they were all like, what the fuck is this guy doing? He's not a businessman. He doesn't own a business. He doesn't even have a fucking job. He just, like, literally sits in the house in the sanitarium, more or less. He used to go to the shop and they would fill his briefcase with vanilla extract. And he would bring it back to the house and just get fucking ripped on vanilla extract.
Oh.
Isn't that fucking insane?
Well,
why? Vanilla extract is terrible. It smells like grandma's house, but it tastes like the most disgusting thing you'll ever put in your mouth.
Cookies and pancakes.
Bad if you drink it straight. It's almost like, I know it's a lot of alcohol, but it's almost like a burning, awful, acrid tasting. It's so bad. So he would smell like vanilla. So that's probably why he did that. But he used to get fucking lit. And I mean, he did this once a week for the entirety of them being there for years.
I mean, do what you gotta do to get through, I guess.
Like, that's a desperation if I've ever seen it. But like, holy crap. Ripped on vanilla extract. Sounds like a party, bro. He seems like a really fun time.
For sure.
For sure. Like, totes my goat. So I thought that was really funny, but I didn't find a way to, you know, like include it in the story.
That's a good side note.
So I'm going to include my sources, which are radio. Excuse me. Nope, that's not it.
There's another post-it note back there.
No, that's not it. Oh, there they are. Sorry. Excuse me. So, Ouija Broads, which is a YouTube podcast channel, and they were good. Appreciate it if you ever hear this. Wikipedia, Murderpedia, SmithsonianMag.com, Starvation Heights, Murder and Mayhem in the Northwest by Greg Olson. Great read. Highly suggest it. And, so I did watch this. I didn't get any information because it was pretty, it was very quick. But this guy goes to Olala and you can actually tour the grounds and where they are now. It's called Stevie TV and it's on YouTube. So he actually like tours the area so there are still unmarked graves there.
Oh man.
There's a cemetery that was there. So the sanitarium actually stands to this day and someone lives in it with a family.
Oh.
So no. He couldn't go to the actual, I know, that's what I said. So they couldn't go to the actual sanitarium because it's private property now. So he couldn't film it, but it was pretty cool. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool to see where it is. I guess it's kind of hard to find now because it's off the beaten path. And all that stuff. So, that is, and this is Linda.
She looks like a hazard.
So, that was the story of Dr. Linda Hazard, the starvation doctor. Did you like it?
I loved it.
Was it good?
It was good. It
wasn't too much?
Dude, that's crazy.
It's a crazy fucking story. I highly suggest the book. He goes into goes way more in depth, but... Good, I'm glad you like it. I hope it just gets everybody's minds off the fucking stupidness that this world is currently.
Yes.
Yes.
And now to get even more off the stupidness, Katie's I would joke.
Corner. She loves me so hard. It's awesome.
Kristen.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call an Italian prostitute?
A meatball.
A prostitute.
I actually knew the answer to that one because I saw it online, but I still went with meatball. Well,
could be a meatball.
Just a big old meatball. I love it. Good. I hope it made everybody laugh.
Yes.
You know the huge stuff, dudes. Like, subscribe, review, leave us something because, you know, we just want to get better for you guys.
I will say that in the last 2-3 weeks, we've had a couple personal requests, and...
We're doing it.
We are all about it, so...
They're coming at you. We just had these kind of on the back burner, so I think we wanted to get these stories out first, and then Katie's going to do hers next week, and then we're going to... Yes.
So I actually had a friend, hey, Rachel, hey, I had no idea that the Star of Rock Killer... even existed. So, I will do a spoiler alert, and I plan to do Star of Rock Killer next week.
I think that a lot of, I think we just assume that people know who he is.
Yeah.
But the case is really old, and people might not know who he is.
Well, and it wasn't like a serial killer, so no. It's not like a known
thing.
There
was a lot of, what do we want to call it? Discrepancies surrounding the case as well. So,
and I plan to fully divulge into
those. There was kind of a lot of stuff. And I know we talked about it, but
people don't know that.
Right. It was
an
older story.
Not everyone knows. Like, we assume that people know all this shit. And
we're just crazy. And we've been in true crime forever.
Yes.
One time when we were in high school, everyone had to do a senior project. And for some reason, we got to choose... And we were like, can we do a serial killer? And we picked Ed Gein.
Yeah.
Everyone picked like...
high school project.
They picked like Albert Einstein and Jimi Hendrix and, you know, like Robert Plant and all these amazing like musicians and people in the fields that they choose. Like, me and Katie were like, can we do someone who dug up dead bodies and then like killed someone?
Yeah.
And we killed it. I'm just saying. So,
I think we did pretty good.
We fucking killed it.
Basically.
I'm not going to spoil mine, but Vanessa, you know what's up.
Yeah, she does.
She knows what's coming.
But yeah, I mean, if you guys want to hear something, please send us a message because we are about pleasing the public.
Yeah, DM us, bros.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
so on that note,
We're going to do the, yeah, like, subscribe, review, follow us. Oh, no body doubt, no problem. What else was I going to say? That's it, right? Oh, yeah, be healthy, be safe, wash your hands. That doesn't do anything, but I hope everybody is well and...
And just, if you're quarantined.
Yeah, I hope this entertains you.
Entertained by us.
Yes, just also. Oh, yeah, you know what I keep forgetting to say? Just be nice and don't murder anybody.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. But
we don't like it.
Yes,
don't
our like it. Thoughts and prayers are with everybody.
Maybe you like it. I don't know.
Don't like it.
Don't give in.
No. Or be like Endgame and just dig up dead bodies and like decapitate them and stuff. Do some weird stuff. Make a skin suit. You know, but as long as you're already dead.
No, I don't support that either.
At least he wasn't a serial killer. He just dug up dead bodies that, like, died of heart attacks.
I will say that there's an idea to that.
It's better than killing them and then making a skin suit than, like, them dying of a heart attack. And his impulse is to make a skin suit. You know what I mean? Like, if it's the other way, wouldn't you rather it be the other way? Like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we have to choose, but we don't. So which is why let's just all agreed not to be fucking weird.
Yeah, well, welcome to my brain. So, yes, that's what, just everybody be cleansing.
Thanks for listening.
We love you all, and just be well, and don't kill anybody, and be nice and don't kill anybody. And that's pretty much it for this episode of Nobody, No Problem. I'm Kristen.
I'm Katie.
And we are signing out.
Bye.
Bye.